Welcome to Inner Circle, the premier softball podcast. Here are your hosts, Eric Lopez and Victor Anderson.
The 1-1 pitch, bounce back to the circle. Lowry throws to first.
Yes!
They did it! They did it again! The Oklahoma Sooners have gone back to back, and they dogpile in the circle. Grit, determination, hard work, and now some more hardware. The Oklahoma Sooners are national champions yet again.
Chris Plank, the voice of Oklahoma softball, now 2 for 2 in the 2 years as the voice of the Sooners, recent guests of In the Circle, and that's what this is. In the Circle, the Oklahoma Sooners, 2017 national champions. I'm Eric Lopez alongside Victor Anderson, and Vic, a dramatic two-game World Series, I guess officially, although
officially two games.
Some would argue they played more than two games. We'll get into the breakdown of the Sooners and the Gators national championship, as well as the Women's College World Series as well overall as a whole coming up on this edition. But before we do that, Vic, tell the audience where they can find us.
Always follow us on Twitter and Facebook, Inner Circle SB. Subscribe to our podcast on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, and iTunes. You follow our blog, innercircleblog.wordpress.com, and send us an email, innercirclesb@gmail.com.
Well, we said it was a two-game series, but some would argue it was more than that. And the reason we say that is because Game 1 of Oklahoma and Florida was a classic. It was billed as the two best programs in college softball. And think about this, so much focus about the fact that every national champion since 2013 has been either Oklahoma or Florida. Oklahoma winning the national title in 2013, Florida 2014 and 15, and then, of course, the Sooners now the last 2 years. But people forget Oklahoma was also in the national title game, and it wasn't for a bit of a rain situation in Game 3 against Alabama. Maybe the Sooners would have won the national title in 2012. We'll get to that back later. So this was the buildup. The two dominant programs, really, this decade. And Game 1 was a classic, Vic. 17 innings. Longest game in the history of the Women's College World Series.
Well, technically speaking, it's the longest in a championship series format.
Correct.
The longest game was a 24-inning game back in 1988.
Oh, wow. But nonetheless, a classic. In a game that was the most watched Game 1 in the history of the Women's College World Series. And it was a surreal game, Vic. It was that was the turning point. I mean, it'll go down officially as a 2-0, and certainly Game 2 is very good. Florida kept battling back. In fact, Florida led 3-1 going into the second inning in Game 2. Oklahoma got the four spot in the second, and the pitching staff held it on for the Sooners 5-4. But in a lot of ways, I felt like Game 1 decided this national championship, because I feel like if Florida wins that 17-inning game, we might have a different story today, and maybe the Gators are national title. As it is, Oklahoma found a way. They won the game in 17 innings. I would argue that Oklahoma beat Florida three times in Game 1. They had a lead in the bottom of the seventh with two outs and two strikes, and Reynoso ties it up in a ball that the left field, that dropped, and then they had the lead in the 12th. Where, again, the Gators were down two. They got two runs in. We kept playing. Florida had chances to win. Oklahoma had the bases loaded in the 15th
and the 16th.
Didn't score. But Shea Knighton made sure. She was the worthy MVP of the Women's College World Series. And, the Sooners win it 2-0. They follow that up by winning Game 2, 5-4. What's fascinating about this series, you had Paige Lowry start Game 1 against Barnhill. Gourley and Paige Parker come in relief during that game.
Yes.
Then you had Lowry re-enter and Barnhill re-enter in the game.
It was nuts. All four pitchers who appeared pitched the equivalent of a complete game.
Sure.
In Game 1. That's how long that game was. And the stories about this game from the broadcasting side, which we'll talk about in a moment, was amazing in itself. But the fact that everybody was so invested on not only both sides, but just as casual fans, it led the 1 a.m. Sports Center. It led the next morning Sports Center AM. It was on most of the major outlets. It was unreal. The tweets. It was trending worldwide on Twitter on that Monday night / Tuesday morning. And I really feel that game could be the game that makes softball a big-time sport.
Well, I think it already is. I mean, I think people are maybe, or I think the better way to describe it, I think people are starting to more wake up about it. Richard Deitch, a media journalist, covers the media and the broadcasting side of things for Sports Illustrated, tweeted it out during the week that college softball is a quietly a power in television. That's a big power boat for ESPN. And it showed again. Game two was actually the number three cable program of all cable. Think about that.
That night.
All day. That night.
Wow.
Number three television program. It was over 1.7 million people watched game two after a follow-up of a 1.6 million plus viewers in game one. And that's not including streaming numbers. The streaming numbers were through the roof. Game two actually was the most streamed game ever watched in softball. Game one, I think, had over 600,000 people watching it on the stream, on the Watch app, or ESPN3. To put that in perspective, game two of the NBA Finals between the Warriors and the Cavaliers had over 400,000 viewers on the stream. So it certainly tells you that people are interested. I will be blogging in the coming days and weeks of the numbers combined for the Women's College World Series, but they had some big numbers. Oklahoma and Oregon, for example, on Sunday had over 1.2 million viewers. So people are watching. I mean, there's no question about it. They're watching, and they watched the classic. They watched I think it is the best postseason softball game ever when you consider the back and forth and just the lockdown, if you will. And then game two comes around, and then Florida decides to start Ocasio, who hadn't started a game since April 30th. Florida does the Gators. Oklahoma counters with Paige Parker. You kind of knew that was coming, but yet Parker gets hit early. Didn't have it.
And she gave up a lot of walks.
Which was her issues in the regional. It was a 3-1 lead for Florida, but then Oklahoma got to Ocasio. Mendez hit a leadoff home run to start the game, and then they got to Ocasio in the second inning. They bring in Gourley. Gourley gives they give up the four runs, and Knighton again involved with the benches, bases loaded, clearing double. Oklahoma led 5-3. They pulled Parker in the second inning. They brought in Lopez, the freshman. Well, I thought maybe Gasso would go to her. To start, she didn't. She waited to come in relief. I thought she did very well. She made the one mistake to Hernan on the home run, but she got him deep into that game. They brought in Mendez to throw, and then finally Paige Lowry to close it out.
How about that story of Paige Lowry? Yeah. Sarah Moulton have a tremendous piece on
from FastPitchNews.com.
FastPitchNews.com. Go ahead and read it. Highly recommend it. And Oklahoma was able to hold on and get themselves a second national championship. And it's amazing, Eric, to think that when they won the championship last year, a lot of people felt that they will be in this position this year. But they got there a year early with all that, with that tremendous young talent. Yes, they lost three tremendous seniors, but you figure that they'll be back here this year. You add in the addition of Paige Lally transferring from Missouri. You get Nicole Mendez, who was the Big 12 freshman of the year, who really didn't crack the regular lineup until the middle of March, as Chris Plank was on our previous podcast talked about. And now you have to mention Patty Gasso as the top college softball coach in the game today. I'm sorry. Three national championships in 5 years, four national championships overall, has produced professional talent left and right, and you know she will be the favorite to win another national championship next year. How can she not be the best coach in the game today?
You won't get an argument from me. They only lose one player from the team, by the way.
Yeah, oh, by the way.
Move to next year. Paige Lowry was phenomenal, and it's an example of why you can't overreact to things early in the season. Oklahoma early in the year threw Paige Lowry a lot in a lot of different scenarios, closing, starting, and you know, they had some struggles early on in the year. Coach Gasso has acknowledged that. But they're trying to find each other's roles. Give Lopez some experience. Yeah. Mendez, get some experience.
And here's the thing.
And this is why it pays off for a moment like this.
And remember, because last year on the way to the title, it was Paige Parker or bust. Paige Parker or bust.
Correct.
They took a gamble when they beat Auburn in game one.
Correct.
Sat Parker game two. Came back to bottom with the Carasone Grand Slam to force game three. That's why they, and that's Coach Patty Gasso, to her credit, and her coaching staff as well.
Sure.
Her coaching staff with Coach Lombardi and Coach JT Gasso have been amazing. And by the way, Lacey Waldrop, graduate assistant.
Helped them out. They talked about that in the telecast where she played the role of Gorley and or Barnhill, and where she would go closer up to the mat from the circle. She would go closer to the batter's box and throw a bunch of risers, kind of playing the role of Barnhill. You're
exactly
right. She did a very big part.
To understand that we can't ride Paige Parker all the way to the championship again this year. We need to get more depth and get Parker some rest. You get Lowry is a godsend, a number one from Missouri who has her own unique story. Again, go to Fast.
Well, she got better. I mean, she got better as the year on, and they got a role for her, which was to close games out.
Yes.
She would start, but close games out. So they had a deeper staff than they did last year. And it paid off here. It paid off. When the moment mattered, it really go back to the regionals in Norman when they lost the opener to North Dakota State. It wasn't Parker that, you know, she had her struggles there. So they had to go to Lowry a lot. They had to go to Mendez and get some innings.
And you know what the game
Lopez.
And you know what the game that really solidified them trusting the staff, that elimination game versus Arkansas. When I saw they go to Lopez and then they go to Mendez, and I'm thinking to myself, what the heck is Coach Gasso doing? Well, that's how you get to win four national championships.
It worked out. It worked out. Now, let's be honest. I mean, you got to have some, you know, fortune. They were three outs away from being eliminated by Tulsa. They were down two going to the bottom of the 10th.
Yep.
Got two-run homers and never looked back. And North Dakota State's the only team that could say they beat Oklahoma in 2017. And they had a big part, and Coach Gasso acknowledged that. That the big thank you card's coming because they woke them up. And that was kind of the moment of truth for Oklahoma to you know, either you're going to win a national title or you're compete for it or you're not. And they found a way, and they took care of Auburn and took care of things at Oklahoma City. So tremendous, tremendous year for them. For Florida, young team, they lose three players, including Gorley. Adam Schick was on a local radio show in Orlando, Drive Time show.
Yes.
Ackerman and O'Neill on the day of game two. And he acknowledged he did not think it was that Ocasio should start. She hadn't started since April 30th. He thought Gorley should get the ball. I kind of agreed. I would have just started Gorley. Sometimes coaches get cute with this stuff. Now, Tim Walton in the postgame said he wanted to give him a different look and maybe get through the order once. I didn't agree with that. And I thought when Florida jumped out to the 3-1 lead, he should have just brought Gorley in right there. Right there. Not even take any more chances. I was surprised because I think Gorley is very underrated. Barnhill, you know, I understand, gets a lot of the attention. Gorley has really been good. Had a great four-year career. Will probably go down as the most underrated Gator pitcher of all time.
Yes.
Because she's not.
Yes.
I don't feel like she's going to get her credit compared to the Stacy Nelsons and the Brombachers and the Hagers and the Hannah Rogers. But she was solid, rock solid. And you look at her track record. It's not an accident that they won two national titles with her on the team. And they don't get here this year without her. She pitched in game two in that Alabama series when they were down one game to none and pitched a gem. She pitched the if necessary game against Oklahoma State and won that game. So I want to tip my cap to Delaney Gorley, who I think has had a phenomenal career.
Yes.
And I moving forward, we'll have a great pro career, international career, whatever she wants to do. I would have started her. I would have started her. Fine, I get it. You want to give him a different look with Ocasio? It didn't work in that first. I would have certainly brought her in when you're up 3-1 in the second because, and this is why, you brought her in with a lot of runners on base. Yes, she got the strikeout to get to the second out, but you're towing a line there with the bases loaded situation there. You walked the run in.
And then the next pitch, Shane Knight hits one to the right center field, got to clear the bases.
Correct.
And essentially give Oklahoma the championship. Now, I do want to ask you this question.
Yeah.
Did Tim Walton ever consider bringing in Barnhill?
He said, actually, on the SEC Now postgame show with Amanda Scarborough and Laura Rutledge, that he has two regrets, which was a very interesting comment. He regrets not using Barnhill last year in the Super Regional against Georgia, and he has regret about not using her in game two. And it was an interesting answer that he gave. We don't have the audio of that, but what he did say, he felt like maybe if I used Barnhill, I would have brought in Barnhill in last year's Super Regional, that would have helped her maybe in game one against Alabama in the Super Regional when they took the loss, when they had a couple of mistakes defensively. Yeah. Maybe that gets her ready, more prepared for the Women's College World Series. Maybe that gets her ready for this moment. I'm paraphrasing what he said, but it was a very interesting comment that he, those were his two regrets, because, you know, you're right. Maybe if he brings Barnhill in, she's electric with her stuff, could be shut down stuff. I don't know about all that. You know, I think that's an that's an interesting comment about the Super Regional comment was very interesting to me. But again, they felt it was a two, you know, they threw Ocasio and Gourley in that against Georgia, so I don't know what you could have done. I think the interesting question that I would have had is when they opened the tournament against FAMU, they started Gourley. They brought Barnhill in relief, and then Ocasio closed it out. I wonder if maybe why not start Ocasio in that game? Get her ready to start a game against FAMU. Let her go deep in case you need her later in the postseason as a pitcher.
Now again, in hindsight being
absolutely. I mean, but, you know, that's some of the people that brought that up. Look, I mean, at the end of the day, if they get one more hit in the 12th with the runner in third or this or that, we're not having these conversations. And let's remember, they're only losing three players. Now, Gourley's a big loss, and the reason I keep bringing her up, it'll be interesting what they do. With Barnhill's the clear ace, Ocasio took more of an everyday role, which was phenomenal. I mean, she had a really, really good year offensively, and a great glove at third base she's turned into. So give her credit. She's a heck of a ball player. And I thought, you know, there's not an accident. She was hitting third in the lineup because that she was hitting, swinging that good of a bat. Does Ocasio get that number two role back and throw more innings, or do they have a freshman coming in that will see? Now, Walton's history, Florida's history, is they kind of bring in the freshmen slowly. So I would assume that Ocasio, at least early on in the year, will carry more of that role as a number two.
Right, and with Barnhill being kind of the lone exception.
Even last year, Barnhill, I watched her in person. They brought her in slowly. She would throw four or five innings, and then they would take her out and bring in a Gourley or bring in an Ocasio in relief. To, you know, she didn't carry the load. She was a number three last year. So, no, even Barnhill was brought in slowly. Very interesting to see what they do there. Obviously, offensively, can Florida get back to that being that dynamic offense that brought them national titles? And I'm not talking about home runs. I'm talking about hitting doubles. They used to be a team that hit a ton of doubles. A
lot of power.
A lot of doubles and extra base hits. They haven't done that this year. Their average was down to 280 this year, which still led the SEC. Now, a lot of that is because you're facing good pitching. But they weren't the dynamic offense. And I wonder if, you know, maybe these young players kind of continue. Lorenz is a beast. I'd like to see Lorenz from a Florida perspective hit in the three spot. Maybe you can find a leadoff hitter like Kelsey Stewart or Moultrie.
And that's exactly what Amanda Scarborough said in the SEC SEC Now postgame show after game two. Move Lorenz down to a three, have her develop that power to be that run producer in that lineup instead of a run scorer herself.
I think she could go down as the best hitter in the history of that program at the way she's developing. She's already a two-time All-American. She's legit. And if you could get runners in front of her, man, look out. And DeWitt's good, too.
Yeah.
Things like that. So, look, I think these two teams are going to be preseason 1-2 going into next year.
No question.
They don't lose a ton. One of the things we'll do on this podcast, Vic will include the final post-game press conferences of Tim Walton and Patty Gasso in there. He will throw that in there. Because they talk about a lot of the stuff going on we have just already discussed, by the way. So we'll have some highlights of those two final press conferences. I know a lot of people may have missed that. They posted it on Facebook and NCAA Softball. I know the Florida Gators have put up the post game on their FloridaGators.com and vice versa. So be on the lookout at the end of this podcast. Real quick, because I actually will I want to do kind of a final. The final polls will come out next week, which we'll probably break down. But I'm going to give you what Vic, you're going to help me think of who should be the top 10 going, you know, rankings moving forward. Okay. But real thought, the other big story, thankfully Oklahoma-Florida was great on the field, settled on the field, because prior to that series, the Women's College World Series was dominated by the umpiring not being good.
Oh, God.
And in particular, the obstruction call at home plate. There was a controversial call in the LSU-UCLA game that went in LSU favor. They called obstruction against UCLA's catcher, gave LSU the run, which the difference in the ball game.
Which put UCLA in the loser's bracket.
Correct. You had a call, obstruction call not called in the Washington-Oregon game. It didn't hurt Washington, but it was a similar situation. And, of course, the UCLA-A&M game in the loser's elimination game on Saturday, where they didn't call obstruction on the Texas A&M catcher. They got a double play. UCLA wanted an obstruction called. Lisa Fernandez went out there, got into a heated argument as she was approaching the home plate umpire. She stumbled on the foot of the umpire that was in between them, and that caused her to bump into the umpire. She got tossed. She got a two-game suspension. She didn't coach the Washington game. She will have to sit the opening game of next season. Mendoza and Michelle Smith talked about it in the broadcast. You heard a lot about it. I think the obstruction call will be addressed in the offseason, I would think, because, you know, and they tried to explain why it wasn't, you know, the differences, but to me, it's very subjective. You look at all three plays, they're very similar. Is the intent, you know, you're trying to avoid the purpose of the rule is to protect the safety of the players, right? You're trying to avoid a collision. Yeah, correct?
Correct.
And yet, in two of the A&M play, you had a bit of a collision where the UCLA player got hit in the face. And this is what drew all this, because she was down for a little bit. And then the LSU play, you had a bit of a collision. Is the catcher blocking the plate? Is she making a catcher's move when she's catching the ball? To me, you got to, I think, I understand the safety and all that.
But
if the catcher's got to do what she's got to do and the runner's got to do what she's got to do, that's the way I would describe it.
The problem is, Eric, obstruction is like any other bang-bang play. It's a judgment call. And the umpiring crews, who for the most part did a tremendous job, did not show the best judgment. It's one of those situations where if you're not sure, you have two other umpires that have different vantage points, at least ask for help in that particular situation. And then if you have to reverse the call and explain it to the coach who's impacted by that, you would tell them, look, my crew, based on what they saw, determined that this happened or this didn't happen. At least ask for help. All coaches, all players, all fans, they just ask that they get it right. That's all that they ask. Get the call right. And it seems that time and time again, we've had issues with the umpires, whether it's being obstruction during the Women's College World Series, whether it's the strike zone that was blowing up Twitter with Alabama-Minnesota in the hit-by-pitch or not hit-by-pitch in that Alabama-Minnesota game and that winner's bracket game. The fans want the best umpires there to decide the championship. They don't want the national championship or any game to determine the season to be dictated by a bad call. That's all they fans want. They want the best players and the best umpires to decide the game.
And we'll get into this more in the offseason here. I think the game's too fast for these umpires. I do think we need replay in postseason. We have the television equipment in to do it, so it's not like a regular season game.
Now, the key word you said there, postseason.
Yeah, because regular season, the reason why we can't do in a regular season is not every game's televised. So I understand the issues there, but in postseason, every game now is televised. So there's a way to make this happen. And when you know there was a play in the Oklahoma-Oregon game, where Oklahoma got their four runs started in the sixth inning with a play that looked like a bunt play that looked like it was foul, and they called it fair.
It was foul.
So a replay could change that. plays at first base, second base. There was a play in the Baylor-Oregon elimination game where Baylor got a rally going in part because there was a ball at second base. The Oregon player at second base got it barehanded, and they called her safe even though she was clearly out. So, again, there's just a lot of missed calls, too many missed calls, and I'm not going to dwell on it now because we got all offseason to rip, but it's just not good. It's not good at all, and I would make the argument right now that softball maybe of all the sports has the worst umpiring / officiating in sports right now. So that has to be addressed because there's a lot more eyeballs and a lot of more attention. So that's unacceptable, and I did take some of the way from the Women's College World Series, unfortunately, prior to the Oklahoma-Florida series. Real quick, because we'll have a special guest calling in a couple of minutes in this podcast. Washington and Oregon finishing 3-4. A great run for both of those. Oregon has had a lot of issues, Vic, in Oklahoma City, scoring runs and quick exits, making a nice deep run. And I'll tell you, they beat Baylor, they beat LSU, and they had Oklahoma on the ropes there. They were a handful of outs away from maybe forcing a, if necessary, game. And who knows what would have happened there. I thought Oregon, Mike White, I thought did his best job he's done there at Oregon. That's a young team, especially pitching-wise. Very impressed with Oregon and Washington. Heather Tart, great job. We had Jen Salen before the year. They're young with their young staff. Oregon and Washington, who I'm going to have in my top five final poll, I thought did a tremendous job for the Pac-12. UCLA, obviously, we'll never know what would have happened if Lisa Fernandez is coaching in that game. I know Sherry Kemp thought it was a big factor and all that. It is what it is. But those three teams with Garcia and Pritchett, the future is bright with those three teams.
Yeah, Garcia could end up being one of the best two-way players ever at UCLA. The way that she pitches and she can hit the ball at the park, she could go down as one of the best two-way players all time. And that says something for that program.
No question about it. So those three programs are very well. LSU could finish probably 5 or 6 in the final polls. Didn't get to the Final Four this year. Lost to Oregon. Wal Jasper, they lost to Florida in the second game. That kind of did them in a little bit, put them behind the eight ball. Wal Jasper not as sharp. And her and Hoover in the combination there. But, the big question, I think, for LSU moving forward is they scored 3 runs in those 3 games in the World Series. That's got to get better. They're hoping that the young kids, the Sanchez, the Doyles, those are the ones that got to continue. They got to develop. You lose Jaquish now, and you lose Landry. So,
and you lose Constance Quinn as well.
Correct. So that's get that offense to that next step, like they did against Florida State when they won a 6-4 game. You're going to have to win some of those games sometimes when you get deep in postseason for LSU. But I know they're excited about their young talent. They got a great pitcher coming in next year to join Hoover and Wal Jasper. They're still going to be in the mix, no question about that, for LSU. And then Baylor, man, I thought Baylor played hard. That Baylor-Oregon game was really a lot of fun. A tremendous year for Glenn Moore and Baylor to get back to the Women's College World. It's a great year for the Big 12.
Yes.
Okay, all the focus on the SEC and the Pac-12, but you have Oklahoma winning the national title. You have Baylor getting to the Women's College World Series, knocking off the Pac-12 champion, Arizona, in a wild super regional. And then you had Oklahoma State, who took a game in Gainesville against Florida to force the if-necessary game against the Gators in the regionals. Kajewski and those guys, that group, that program is on the way up. And even Texas, I know, gets criticized a lot. They got to a regional final as well. So I thought the Big 12 had a phenomenal postseason and made loud noises and proved to me that they're at least the third best conference in the sport and probably should get a little more respect down the road. We had this conversation in our last podcast about, again, Oklahoma 10 seed, that's the big story, double-digit seed winning the national title, the lowest seed ever. But you know why they were? Because they were terribly underseeded.
And that's another story for another
They should have been a top 8 seed. And now some people have thrown out conspiracy theories that they tend to underseed Oklahoma because some people think they have a home field advantage when they're playing in Oklahoma City in the World Series. I feel like that's a lot of excuses stuff. But it is what it is. So that was my thought on it. And but look, I mean, Oklahoma, real quick, see if you agree with me. Oklahoma, obviously, number one, final poll.
Yes.
I'm going to put Florida 2.
Yeah.
Washington 3.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon 4.
Okay.
This is where it gets interesting. Where do we rank Minnesota?
I got them 5.
So you got them ahead of LSU.
Yes. Because you cannot punish Minnesota Yes, I understand.
For the record, traditionally polls tend to reward teams that get to Oklahoma City and finish them in the top 10. Just for but as you were.
Yeah.
Because now what's fascinating about this final poll, Minnesota was the number one ranked team going in the NFCA poll, going into the NCAA tournament. You had Arizona, who was a top three team going into the postseason. They lost in the Supers. They were the Pac-12 champions. So where do you rank Arizona? Where do you rank Florida State?
Now, here's my question. What do you rank Texas A&M?
I mean, that's going to be some of the interesting questions here in this final poll that I'm curious about that'll come out in the next week here. I'm very interested to see where do you rank all these teams, because Florida State, definitely top 10 team. Arizona's definitely a top 10 team. And I agree with you. I think Minnesota's a top 10 team. So that's going to be very interesting. Where do you put these teams in your polls? And it's going to be, it could be at the expense of some of the teams that made it to Oklahoma City, possibly.
Yeah.
No, and then there's controversy. For example, do you put Baylor? You have to almost put Baylor ahead of Arizona. They beat them on the field, right?
Exactly.
So how far does Arizona drop? Minnesota on the road. It's just very, I'm very interested, actually. It's just one of the more rare, usually I don't really care about the final polls because really it doesn't matter in the big picture, but I am interested to see what the coaches do to vote on this in the top 10. I will go. All right, I'll go with you, Victor. I'll go Minnesota 5, LSU 6, Florida State 7, Baylor 8. UCLA 9?
Wow. I have LSU over I have UCLA over LSU, honestly.
LSU finished beat UCLA in Oklahoma City. I know it's controversial, but they beat them and they went deeper into the postseason.
Yeah. I mean,
you see the dilemma here.
Yes.
UCLA, then Arizona, maybe 8-9, something like that. Baylor's got to be thrown in there. Top 10? I don't know. It's a headache. It's a headache there. That's going to be very – we'll break that down in a future podcast.
Yeah, and of course, some news that we want to talk about a little bit before we go to our guests. Georgia Tech was looking for a softball coach. They've hired one in Aline Morales. She is going to be the new head coach.
Say that again, Vic, for the audience may have just missed that.
Yes, Aline Morales. She will be named the new head coach.
Tell us a little bit about her.
She's former Georgia Tech alum, new hired by the athletic director, Todd Stansberry. Yep. So she's going to be named the sixth head coach in Georgia Tech history. And think about this. You're talking about someone who has led Georgia Tech as a player and an assistant coach to 4 regular season titles, 4 ACC tournament titles, 8 trips to the regionals from 2005 to 2012, and was part of that super regional team in 2009. So somebody who knows about winning with that Yellow Jacket program is now going to be taking over that program.
And we'll get more into that in the offseason. Obviously, a lot of hirings will get taken place this offseason, so we're going to stick around this year in the offseason. Keep it here. Again, Vic, where can they follow us? Because this offseason, we're not going away. We got a lot of stuff going on, a lot of big stuff going on moving forward coming up here.
In the Circle SB on Facebook and Twitter. Subscribe to our podcast on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, and iTunes. Follow our blog, inthecircleblog.wordpress.com, and send us an email, inthecirclesb@gmail.com.
All right, but before we go, we got to bring in a friend of ours.
We do.
Diehard Sooner fan. Maybe the biggest diehard I know. Longtime fan of the Sooners. He's a colleague. He's a producer slash engineer in an Orlando radio station. And we refer to him as Sooner Sean. And can we call you still Sooner Sean, or you want to go full name here?
Yeah, you can call me whatever you want me to call me. It's fine.
All right, Sooner Sean joins us here on the podcast. First of all, tell the audience about the you're a co-host of an Oklahoma podcast. Tell us about that.
Well, I've been doing this silly little podcast thing since 2009. Of course, I don't think anyone was listening then. But this is C3 Podcast. It's been going strong for the past couple years. And Joe Bettner and I have been partners, and we've known each other for a while. And basically, we try to do it weekly. We haven't been able to do that last couple weeks due to scheduling conflicts. But obviously, we will be recording pretty late tonight.
Yeah, I would have. I wonder. Yes, as we recorded this podcast, the big story in Norman. I mean, this has been an interesting week, actually, and I'm glad you're here, actually, because it's been an interesting week in Oklahoma athletics for people that may not be aware. By the time we recorded this, you had Oklahoma in the Women's College World Series playing for the national title. Wild games against Florida, up and down there. But then all of a sudden, the head football coach of Oklahoma, Bob Stoops, decides to retire the day after Oklahoma wins the national title. In fact, in the statement, he said he didn't want to make a statement earlier because he didn't want to be a distraction to the softball team. Well, sorry, Coach Stoops, you are.
So, who would have thought that, like, that after game one of the championship series would not be the biggest story in Oklahoma sports this week? But, yeah, it's just been the last couple weeks. It's just I thought I was going to get on here and talk about how just the athletic program in general has just been racking up national championships like nobody's, whether it's men's golf or, you know, doubles, men's doubles tennis. And, you know, now we're adding another softball championship and it's just golf. And I mean, gymnastics earlier. I mean, they've racked up, the whole program's wrapped up, I think, 7 championships in the past 2 years, which is more than any program in the country. And then all of a sudden you lose your head football coach of 18 seasons, but at the same time you get told, oh, by the way, you get the hottest coordinator to take his place, and he's already on your staff.
Lincoln so Riley.
It's a good news, bad news thing, but it still kind of feels like your dog died, but you still have your cute pet kitten that you got for Christmas last year. So it's just one of those things where you're not quite sure how to process it yet, but you think everything's going to be okay, though.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you hope. I mean, you mentioned all the success in all the sports, and now, and maybe this is an optimistic point of view. Oklahoma's tennis, men's tennis program, John Roddick left after last season, went to UCF, turned that program around, made the NCAA tournament, but Oklahoma tennis won the doubles title? So they, you know, that's a positive omen, right?
Yeah, you're kind of hoping they would, like, cash in on Roddick's great recruiting and coaching, and think, right, even though after he left. And so you're not sure how the program is going to go from here on out, but, you know, you hope for the best, and you hope they can keep momentum going. But at the same time, it's just one of those things where, you know, got to keep going. But softball, you know, I know that's kind of what you want to get to, is it's been fantastic. It's I'm sure you have this story, but, like, you know, who no one grows up a softball guy, and then but once you kind of get the bug, once you kind of get, like, you know, the taste of it, so to speak, it's like you kind of get a little addicted to it. But once you have a team that's fun to watch and is interesting, it's like you can't turn the games off. They're just like edge of your seat thrillers.
It's ironic that Bob Stoops decided to retire, because I did want to ask you a lot about Patty Gasso. This is her 4th national championship there at Oklahoma. And certainly Bob Stoops, well, I guess now we have to say in past tense, was the face of Oklahoma athletics, as every football coach usually is. But now you got a young Lincoln Riley who's going to be the head coach. We don't know if he'll be good or not. I agree with you. I think he's going to be really good. But we don't know. Where is Patty Gasso in the pecking order in Oklahoma athletics? Is she the face of women's athletics at Oklahoma? And is she now one of the main faces in that department with Bob Stoops out?
Well, I was about to say, like, for the women's sports, absolutely. I think there's no question. I mean, Sherry Cole is kind of still part of that group, even though she's the women's basketball team's been having on the downslide lately, even though they've had a, you know, they've made some deep runs in the tournament before with the Paris Twins a few years. It feels like it's only been a few years, but it's been longer than that. But yeah, Patty Gasso, she's I think the only coaches on the campus that have more championships than her are the gymnastics coaches.
Wow.
The men's gymnastics, because the running joke among Oklahoma Sooner fans is, you know, whatever championship they win, that's what kind of school we are right now. So we've been a men's gymnastics school, women's gymnastics school, golf, softball, you name it. You know, that's the type of school that we are. But, I mean, whoever the head football coach is going to be the face of the athletic program.
Oh, no question, no question.
So, but Patty Gasso is like, I think that woman deserves a raise. I'm really excited about the new upgrades to the facilities they're getting. They've more well than earned it. And I think Oklahoma is going to be a permanent power in softball from here on out.
Well, and someone asked me this question, so I'll ask you this, because somebody actually texted me this prior to us doing this, was how did Oklahoma become a power in softball? How did they become all of a sudden this time? Because, you know, they've won now back-to-back national titles. They won a national title in 2013, which I think is the best softball team ever assembled. I mean, it's the best team ever in the history of the sport, in my opinion. They had everything, power, speed, dominant pitching with Kalani Ricketts and company. They had Lauren Chamberlain and Shelby Pendley and all that. And, you know, there were some weather issues away maybe from going back-to-back in 2012. They lost to Alabama in the game that was kind of had some rain issues, and Ricketts had control issues with this, literally with the ball, with the rain, and certainly some controversy to that. Although I do maintain that I think that motivated Oklahoma to just dominating the following year. So who knows? But they had won a national title as well prior to that as well. But, you know, you follow Oklahoma athletics as well as anybody. I mean, how did this all just come about? What's the secret remedy there to Oklahoma being a power now, and in my opinion, the program in college softball?
Well, I think that 2000 team, unfortunately, yep, got overshadowed because guess what Bob Stoops did in 2000?
Yeah.
He resurrected the Oklahoma monster, the football program. So it was like back in 2000, it was like, oh, softball won too. That's nice. But football's back. You know, that's good. But I think you got to give all the credit to Patty Gasso. I think she's like, I mean, maybe I'm crazy saying this, I think she's the Nick Saban of college softball. She really is. I mean, how could you not give her that compliment at this point? And, you know, winning this series against Florida was just, it wasn't just winning one championship. It was literally claiming a dynasty. It was between two programs, the two most dominant programs of the past 5 years. It was literally a rubber match that against two teams that have only played each other once. So it's just one of those things where you're I don't want to say happy accident, that doesn't make sense, but you're just like, it's just a pleasant surprise, I guess is the phrase I should use. But it's just one of those things where you're just glad to have a Patty Gasso as part of your program, and it's just a positive overall for non-revenue sports, especially when it's a part of your campus.
And by the way, they only lose one player from this year's team, so they're going to be preseason number one next year again, trying to go for a three-peat. So,
I think I keep on having different favorite players every year, but like I think for the past 2 years, without question, my favorite is Shea Knighton. I think she has the most intimidating stare of any batter I have ever seen. And that includes some major leaguers, too. Like, when she comes up to the plate, it's like, all right, good things are about to happen here. And, she's clutch in the World Series.
No question about it. Take me through. This has been a fascinating postseason run for Oklahoma. I mean, going back to Norman, they had weather issues in the regional. You lose to North Dakota State on Saturday because the games got pushed back because of weather. You lose to North Dakota State, become the first defending national champion to lose your opening game in the NCAA tournament since 1985, which Patty Gasso has said now since that was a blessing in disguise. But, you know, at the time, you're like, whoa, what's going on? Arkansas. You beat Arkansas in a really back-and-forth ball game. It was a really well-played game. You get to the regional final. You're three outs away from being eliminated by Tulsa, who's throwing an All-American and Emily Watson. You're down two. You get back-to-back two-run homers in that 10th inning to pull it off. You win the regional. You then go to Auburn in a rematch of the Women's College World Series from a year ago. You sweep Auburn in Auburn. You go to Oklahoma City. You have to face Baylor, which nobody expected. Your rival, you've been playing in the Big 12. You beat them, then you got to play Washington, which is a really good team out of the Pac-12, good solid ball game. You pull that one out, then Oregon. You got to face Oregon, and Oregon jumps on you. And now you're thinking, well, this might go to an if-necessary game on the Sunday. Oklahoma has that big inning. They come from behind to win that game, and then, of course, the classic with Florida, which we'll get into in a second, but this has been the one loss record will look on paper dominant, but it was one of the most dramatic runs to a national title. And really, I don't know how many people, Sooner fans, Sean, were thinking national title after the first game of the postseason.
Well, we've worked together for about 10 months now,
sure.
And I think I told you before the season started, like I was fairly confident that Oklahoma was going to win, despite, you know, they had that early loss in the non-conference against Auburn. I'm like, okay, it's early in the year, but I also told you, like, the loss to North Dakota State was all part of the plan. It was all part of the plan to get the team motivated. I say that jokingly, but I think it woke the team up.
Yep.
And it helps when it's not just – it helps that you have the majority of that team had been there before. They had been on the stage, and they knew what it took to win a championship. And the scary part is, again, as you mentioned, they lose one senior, and the core of this group is going to be back again next year. And, you know, can they three-peat is the question, and I don't see why they couldn't at this point.
They have a deeper staff. You know, it's not all Paige Parker, and I think game two showed that with Paige Lowry. You got the freshman Lopez, Mendez. I mean, this team is more deeper than maybe even past Oklahoma team, certainly last year's team that really pretty much was carried by Paige Parker and from that standpoint. So take me through that game one, that 17-inning marathon as a fan. You're watching this. I mean, take me through the emotions of that ball game as a Sooner fan.
Well, I don't even know where to begin because it feels like such a blur at this point, but I think the one moment you go back to is the seventh inning, the error in left field where that would have ended the game. And there were many, many moments where as that game is going on, you're thinking to yourself, you're going to think back to that error. That's going to cost them. But I think what's more insane is that I think leading up to the 17th and the 15th and 16th innings, respectively, Oklahoma had the bases loaded twice and couldn't get any runs to home plate. They couldn't get any runners home. And you're thinking to yourself, wow, this is going to be it. This is going to cost them. And the fact that it was getting to 15, 16, 17 innings, that game became, at least in my eyes, for the national championship. Like, whoever lost that game was basically done in my eyes. If you lost that game, as long as it went, there was no way you were going to come back and win two. Impossible. So the fact that, once again, as I mentioned, Shane Knighton being the hero and just an exhausting, you know, performance for both sides, it was a heck of a game. It lived up to the hype. The two best programs lived up to the hype, and unlike the NBA Finals that are going on right now, like college softball's two best teams literally are the two best teams in the country. And you're just happy you got the win. You had no idea what was going to happen with game two, and you knew, but the pressure was all on Florida. And it just knew as the game went on that it was going to be back and forth and pitchers were going to come in and out. But when Parker came in there and was taken out early, you were like, oh boy, what's going to happen here? But sure enough, they were able to Gasso's able to make the right call, and Lowry's able to lead them down the home stretch.
Monster television numbers. It was the most watched game one ever in the history of the Women's College World Series.
Rating. How could it not be?
Right. I mean, everybody. I mean, it bumped out a baseball game. Game. The whole series was 20% higher than Oklahoma's win against Auburn last year. It broke. It's the two games is the most watched streamed softball game, which was fascinating. Game one, I believe, had over 600,000 stream views online. In other words, people are watching on ESPN3 or on the app. For game one, it's the most watched softball game ever, and they actually surpassed that number in game two. And to tell you how big that number is, game two of the finals streamed 400,000 viewers. So it tells you how huge the top two markets for the Women's College World Series, and in particular the championship series, Oklahoma City and Tulsa. And it tells me, and I've traveled up there, and I know you do too from time to time, that's a softball. I mean, there's a passion there with softball. It is where. How do you rank women's softball in Oklahoma? Obviously, football's king. It's number one by far. But is softball up in the upper echelon from a popularity standpoint right now? Is it number three maybe behind men's basketball?
Yeah, as you were saying that, I was thinking, like, what could possibly be, you know, because immediately football, basketball come to thought, but I would have to say without question it's number three, and then after that you might give some love to either the baseball team, who's they're kind of up and down right now. They were kind of thought to be a dark horse this year, but you know, fizzled out in the regionals. Both the men's and women's gymnastics programs are fantastic, and I would say I would definitely get them a solid number three. It's without question. football, basketball, and got to give it up to softball because they're bringing in the championships.
I know you've told me this, where Oklahoma has statues of all their Heisman Trophy winners. Right, is that correct?
They're
going to
have a 6-1 next year when Baker Mayfield
wins it. There you go. Vic's shaking his head right now. Do they do anything for coaches like Switzer? Have they done anything or no?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like all the football coaches, like the qualifications, I believe, is they said coaches who've had 100 wins or more. So you have Benny Owen, you have Bud Wilkinson, Barry Switzer, and now that Bob is retired, they've already had his statue made. They just weren't going to have it. They weren't going to erect a statue while he was still coaching because, you know, that's a little weird to do that, Alabama. But, it's just one of those things where, I know you, should Patty Gasso get a statue? Absolutely.
Or something. Not necessarily a statue. I'm just fascinated. What do you think Oklahoma should do? Because they should do something, whether it be a statue, whether it be something to do with facilities. I don't know. But
facilities are getting an upgrade, obviously, but I think they should give that woman a raise.
She's already the highest paid coach in the sport. So. but you're right. Hey, I mean, why not, right? But do you think that down the road, whenever she, and who knows? I mean, heck, we're all shocked by Bob Stoops retiring. Who's to say? Who knows when Patty Gasso, how much longer she'll want to coach? But whenever that day comes, you know, do they name a stadium after her? Do they name a facility after her? Do they give her a statue near the Sapa? Who knows? What do you think they should do for her whenever that day is?
Well, whatever they decide to do, I mean, you got Joe Castiglione, who, in my opinion, is the best athletic director in all of, like, college sports, and David Warren, the president of the university. They take care of their coaches when they do well. So I'm sure whatever something will come down to the pipeline eventually, whatever it may be, Patty Gasso will get honored appropriately at some point, if not sooner than later. So no pun intended. But, I think whether they name the field after her, stadium, whatever, I'm sure that's coming down the road.
The last question, because I know it's going to be a busy, busy time for you now with the whole Bob Stoops story now on, you know, situation. But since he retired, you had a coach already basically. I don't know if Lincoln Riley was the coach in waiting unofficially. Now it's official or whatever, but whenever Patty Gasso does decide that she's had enough, do you think they will keep it from within with one of the assistants, whether it be Lombardi or her son, JT Gasso, or do they go outside? And, you know, some people have thrown out the name. Tim Walton got his start in softball because of Patty Gasso, and something I don't think I didn't watch. Vic, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know if they really pushed this angle in the telecast on ESPN, but Tim Walton was a national champion for Oklahoma in baseball.
Oh, they talked about the connections in game number two between Walton and Gasso and how Rocha played for Gasso and everything else. So
where was I then? All right, maybe I wasn't paying attention.
You were probably not paying attention.
No, I wasn't. Thank you. That's why you're here, Vic. So. Yes. My point is, Walton obviously is an Oklahoma alum, won a national championship. Some have suggested that whenever that day comes, that he'll certainly get a phone call because he is part of an Oklahoma family. And in fact, if you watched the post game, Tim Walton was very complimentary about the Oklahoma fans and how he appreciated how they weren't negative towards his team. They were just very pro Oklahoma, and it was a great environment, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think? And you mentioned Castiglione, he'll make the decision to bet, and I agree with you. He's right there, he's one of the best ADs. Do they try to keep it within the staff? Kind of like what football has basically doing here. Do you think they'll try to just go get a big name? Because I do think Oklahoma when it is a marquee job, not just in football, but in softball.
Well, I mean, it's too early to tell. I don't see any signs of Patty Gasso slowing down. Granted, she...
Let's hope.
She had to deal with the loss of her father earlier in the year, and obviously she was very emotional last night after the big win. And so you don't know... You don't know what the future holds there, but as I said before, whatever may come down the pipeline, I have the utmost confidence that Joe Castiglione will make the best decision for the program when that day comes. So that's basically what I think is going to happen.
Who's the most popular Oklahoma softball player of all time? I'm actually kind of interested. Is it Kalani Ricketts? Is it Lauren Chamberlain? Shelby Penley? Is it Paige Parker? Who?
Oh, come on. It's got to be the home run queen. Lauren Chamberlain. Okay. Granted, she might lose that title next year, but she's got it right now. But I think Lauren Chamberlain by far is the icon of Oklahoma softball. But
right, because Right. Her and Kalani, right? Because she transcends softball, right? Because a lot of times, you know, there's players that transcend the program, especially in Olympic sports, you know, to get the person that maybe is not interested in softball in February but is in May. Oh, I'm not a softball fan, but I know who Lauren Chamberlain is. Is that basically the how she's looked at from an Oklahoma standpoint?
Yeah, I would say so. But I'll tell you what, if Shane Knighton keeps on doing what she's doing, she may, like, I don't know, she may not have records, but, like, as I said, she's my favorite because she's clutch in the big games. And so, and they're going to have her at least for another year or two.
Well, think about this. Maybe the two biggest home runs in the history of that program, at least in recent memory, Chamberlain with the walk-off in game one against Tennessee in the 13th inning. To beat Tennessee in the 2013 World Series, and then Knighton in the 17th inning against Florida. Pretty unique moments there, to say the least. By the way, was I the only one that was paranoid every time ESPN kept bringing up all the walk-off extra innings home runs? Did you not feel a little annoyed, like, oh, why are you keep bringing this up? You know, Florida, with Florida being the home team, it's like they're setting it up for the walk-off.
You know, I have to be the only person who wears crimson and cream who wasn't annoyed by the ESPN broadcast. because I'm on Twitter, like, I'm not away from Twitter for a second during that game. And every other tweet is, like, from OU fans just lambasting the ESPN broadcast. I'm like, guys, they don't hate OU. They're rooting for, like, they root for interesting.
Right.
They want this game to be great, even greater than it already is. Just like nobody hates OU.
They're just used to Chris Plank. Just listen to Chris Plank.
Exactly.
Chris is awesome. You know, he does a great job.
He was the most recent guest in our podcast, and Sooner Sean, congrats. You make your debut in a softball podcast. I know this is going to go down in history for you here, but I wanted to get you on because we said if Oklahoma wins the national title, we were going to get you on, and we got you on. It was unique circumstances. We didn't expect Bob Stoops to be a big story to distract us from it, but hey, you know.
Listen, do not let Bob Stoops' retirement distract you from the fact that Texas lost to Kansas in football.
And on that note, Sean, tell the audience where they can find your work as far as the Oklahoma podcast, which is obviously going to be a very anticipated podcast, but I know you guys do talk softball in it, so.
Yeah, we'll try to sneak in softball after the news that broke today. I'm kidding, of course. But if you can check out the C3 podcast, we're a part of the SoonerSportsRadio.com, the Sooner Sports Radio network. There's other great podcasts on there, Bob Prisbillo and Alan Kenny with Blatant Homerism. And we try to do one weekly. We haven't had any luck doing that lately due to scheduling conflicts. But obviously there's stuff to talk about now. So by the time you're listening to this, our podcast will probably be up. So just check us out at SoonerSportsRadio.com, the C3 podcast.
All right, say that one more time.
SoonerSportsRadio.com. And our show is the C3 podcast.
Good stuff, bud. Take care of that. Knock that out. I will be tuning into that. Definitely will be tuning in. I have a feeling a lot of people are going to be tuning into your next podcast now with the Bob Stoops story. But let's not lose the fact of a great accomplishment that the softball program has done, bringing another national title to that program. Thanks, Sean.
I appreciate it.
And Sooner Sean, thanks to him for joining us. I feel a nice little treat. I feel it's fitting to the rich, to the rich.
To the victors, go to spoils.
Exactly.
And oh, by the way, Eric, we do want to let our fans know that we are working to have the man who we heard at the start of the podcast, Chris Plank, join us at a future podcast to give us his perspective on that 17-inning marathon and calling yet another Oklahoma national title.
Well, and that's the thing. Just because the college softball season's done, that means that we're not done. We're going to still continue. We're going to still continue with some interviews and talk to a lot of programs, coaches, former players, broadcasters.
Oh, yeah, and the MPF is going on.
The MPF season is going on. We have Aaron Moore lined up down the real soon as well. The architect of the two-time defending Chicago Bandits, MPF champion. So we got a lot of stuff coming up. Vic, tell the audience where they can find us one more time.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, Inner Circle SB. Subscribe to our podcast on Podomatic, iTunes, and Apple Podcasts. Follow our blog, innercircleblog.wordpress.com, and you can always send us an email, innercirclesb@gmail.com.
And that'll do it for this edition. We will leave you now with the final post-game press conference of the defending of the new, the, well, the same old national.
The reigning defending, in the words of our advocate Paul Heyman.
Patty Gasso among players chosen in the press conference following their victory. We'll get, Vic will post it, some of that audio of that post game, and then of course Tim Walton and the Florida Gators. We'll have a little snippet there as well. But the victors go first. Let's hear. We'll leave you with that. And we hope you enjoy the Women's College World Series. Until next time, for Vic, I'm Eric. This has been In the Circle.
And I congratulate Florida. What a great, great team. Well coached. They're tough. The battle that we had last night was unbelievable. And I think we still feel a little adrenaline from last night as well. But it was a challenge. And words cannot express. I still cannot believe that this happened with where we started and where we finished. There's so many stories. The journey was unbelievable. And I think if you looked at us in February, March, even parts of April, you would never imagine us sitting here right now with trophies in front of us. So proud of this group, their efforts. It was team. We had 17 players on our roster, 17 players. Everybody had to contribute some way or the other, and they did, and they bought in, and they just went for it. They weren't afraid. They didn't panic. They were fearless. It was still speechless. It was incredible. It was incredible. I want to send them a thank you card for waking us up. And they did, and that scare is almost what we needed to step forward and say, we're not going home. Not on our field, we're not going home. And we've had some magical moments in this postseason, and what Sid and CeCe and those guys coming big with home runs and keeping us alive. I don't know, that magic that happened at our field with our fans is something that we grabbed onto and we just kept going.
I think the bond that our whole pitching staff has is something that is very, very special, and I wanted to be with them every single pitch, and I wanted them to know that, you know, no matter what happens, I have your back. And I'm just so proud of this pitching staff. We've come a long way this year, and we worked so, so hard. And huge credit to Coach Lombardi, because she's the best pitching coach in the country, and she works harder than anyone I've ever seen, and I'm just so blessed to have her as my pitching coach.
Now, first, congratulations to Oklahoma on the national championship. It's a hard-fought two games. Wish we could have pushed it to a third and give us a chance, but I thought overall our players were really proud of our team. Congratulations to Coach Gasso on another national championship, and to the University of Oklahoma. Just thanks to the NCAA, ESPN, All Sports, University of Oklahoma hosting this tournament. It's a great, great event. Just an awesome event when you get that many people in there cheering and the crowd. I mean, I thought the crowd was great, and I give a lot of credit to the OU fans for being very respectful. They were cheering and chanting and doing their cheers, and you know, nothing was ever any negative tone towards us. They were just cheering the heck out of their team, and I give them a lot of respect for competing the right way with a lot of class. So congratulations. Yeah, I had an in-game interview, and you know, I mentioned to Holly, we got to find a way to get another run up there before we get, you know, Paige Lowry coming in at the end. We knew what she's going to be able to do, and so we overall, I thought we were prepared. We tried to do everything we could to get that runner at second base. I think with one out, in the sixth, we had a chance. But I'm proud. I can't tell you, you know. Again, I know my players. We questioned their toughness breaking camp for the fall, and they all took notice, and they worked hard, and they put in the extra effort. They did all the things that they needed to do. We have a lot of kids that have really put in above and beyond what we ask of them, because they all have high expectations for being great. So our coaching staff works really hard, but again, I think to get to this point, it takes a special group of players that really has a drive for their own, you know, not perfection, but greatness. So I give not only these three, but you know, the rest of our team, the other 15 women, just a tip of my cap for how hard they work and just how much they really appreciate each other. Yeah, I told Roach I was hoping we can get through one time through the lineup, just to change the look from what they're getting before we brought in the, you know, Delaney, and then before we came back with Kelly. So it was more about matchups. They get the home run early, get a couple, nice little infield hits to go along with that late. But I just felt like it was a good opportunity for us to try to piece together this game and stretch it out as long as we could. Other than really, two bad pitches, I thought we pitched pretty well. We had good defense, hit the ball well. But it just wasn't our tournament. I mean, you look at the statistics, it's eerie how close the games were statistically. So I think that you got two even match teams. One just found a way to hit the ball over the fence more than we did, and give them a lot of credit.
The 1-1 pitch, bounce back to the circle. Bowie throws to first.
Yes!
They did it! They did it again! The Oklahoma Sooners have gone back to back, and they dog pile in the circle. Grit, determination, hard work, and now some more hardware. The Oklahoma Sooners are national champions yet again.